Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. We're going to be talking about brain fog today, something a lot of people and a lot of women have been experiencing in the past year.
I should explain as well that brain fog, it's not a disease, it's not a disorder, it's not a diagnosis. What it really is a warning that something is amiss. It really is a signal to take action, like a cough, a persistent cough would be a signal to take action.
Now, before we go to brain fog, I wanted to give another shout out to Jacinda Ardern and her cabinet in New Zealand, because not only have they played a blinder with COVID while we are still stuck in lockdown, they also have unanimously approved legislation that would give couples who suffer a miscarriage or stillbirth 3 days of paid leave. And it puts the country in the vanguard of those providing such benefits. And they're the first in the world to do this. Employers in New Zealand, as in some other countries, had already been required to provide paid leave in the event of a stillbirth when a fetus is lost after 20 weeks or more. But the new legislation is going to expand that and give leave to anyone who loses a pregnancy at any point, removing any ambiguity. And the measure is expected to become law in the coming weeks. I just think it's a brilliant piece of news, and I wanted to leave you with a quote from Ginny Anderson, the Labour Member of Parliament who drafted the bill in New Zealand. She said, "I felt that it would give women the confidence to be able to request the leave if it was required, as opposed to just being stoic and getting on with life when they knew they needed time physically or psychologically to get over the grief." And so say all of us. It's some good news, and hopefully other countries, including Ireland, will follow their lead. Pregnancy loss and miscarriage affects so many women and men and their families. And if you haven't experienced it yourself, I know that you know someone who has, and it really needs to be acknowledged more. And that seems like a very fair and compassionate way to deal with people when they're in that situation. Now, today we're going to be talking about something that might have affected you if you got COVID, but it also just might be affecting you generally. It's the condition of brain fog. Neuroscientist Dr. Sabina Brennan has written the book on it, Beating Brain Fog, and she also suffered from it herself, so she really does know what she's talking about. If you go and complain about brain fog to a medical profession, you're likely to be told that it isn't a recognised condition. But if you say brain fog to your friends, they'll probably know exactly what you mean. Fuzzy thinking, trouble concentrating, a sense of grasping for the right word, feeling like your brain is somehow slowed down. Now, brain fog is not a diagnosis in itself, but it is, says Dr. Brennan, a sign that things aren't right in your body. So Sabina came on the podcast to guide us through the science, to show us how our brains work and why we might experience confusion and anxiety. She has tools to help you identify your own cognitive profile, determining the causes of your specific symptoms. And she's got simple strategies that help you feel like yourself again. We were also joined, and we were delighted to be joined, by 31-year-old Joanna Lester, who works for the NHS in Scotland, and she had been having an awful experience with brain fog, and she took Dr. Brennan's 30-day plan, and then she really did experience a lot of improvements. So what Sabina is talking about works. I talked to them both, so I hope this is helpful. Here they are, Sabina Brennan and Joanna Leschuk on brain fog.
Sabina, I'm going to come to you first. What is brain fog?
Well, brain fog is, it's an umbrella term, and it really describes a collection of symptoms that can be described as cognitive dysfunction. So basically, the most common symptoms are loss of mental clarity, trouble concentrating, trouble focusing, a sense of slowing, like that it's taking you longer for information to come in, make sense of it, and then respond. Also problems with memory, with forgetfulness, and with taking in new information. We'd call that learning, but actually just taking it, you know, even someone showing you how to use a remote control and you kind of go, no, sorry, what? Problems with language, the ones we're familiar about, like word finding or substituting the wrong word, or actually just feeling that your language isn't as rich or as fluid as it ordinarily would be. And then some people are quite surprised, problems with bumping into things, like a clumsiness, but also, you know, difficulty making decisions and planning and organizing, and just really even simple decisions like what to wear or what to cook for dinner, you know, just and a real sense of fatigue, like a mental fatigue. I'm just too tired to think.
Well, it seems like anecdotally anyway, and looking on social media and just talking to friends, it seems to be something that in the pandemic in the last year, it seems very timely. It seems to be, and whether it's just anecdotal or whether there's something in it, maybe you can talk about that. Is it more prevalent in a time like this when people are, you know, having to deal with something quite unprecedented and, you know, scary and also just, yeah, mind blowing a bit?
Yeah, if you look to the causes of brain fog, it makes perfect sense that so many people are dealing with it. I should explain as well that brain fog, it's not a disease, it's not a disorder, it's not a diagnosis. What it really is a warning that something is amiss. It really is a signal to take action, like a cough, a persistent cough would be a signal to take action. Now, all of those things that I just described, and they happen to all of us. Everybody has experienced them at some point. You know, you might experience them if you have jet lag, or, you know, if you've been out late two nights in a row, or, you know, working too hard, you know. But the thing with brain fog is they're persistent, they recur, and they interfere with your quality of your life, your ability to work, your relationships. And the root causes, you know, there can be underlying health conditions, there can be the side effect of medication, hormonal changes or hormonal imbalance. But then there's also more lifestyle related stuff. And it's usually a combination of things. So the lifestyle stuff are, you know, poor diet or dietary deficiency, disrupted or poor sleep, poorly managed chronic stress, lack of exercise, lack of mental stimulation or understimulation or overstimulation. And then, as I said, the diet. So when it comes to the pandemic, now, not COVID brain fog, because that's also a thing, but sort of I'm calling it pandemic brain fog. Loads of people just feel chronically stressed. That alone will interfere with your brain function. But then people are having disrupted sleep and an added stressor of their routines and habits have been taken away from them. And habitual behavior is less resource heavy on your brain. It's less demanding. It's handled by an unconscious part of your brain. So pre-pandemic, 40% of most of our daily activities are habitual. We don't have to think of them. Then suddenly one day last year, we were all told to go home, figure out how to work from home. All the routines were disrupted. So that means your thinking part of your brain, which is really, really resource heavy, is doing everything. And the very reason that the brain looks for patterns to automate is that it doesn't have the capacity to do that. So the simple solution in that context is to re-engage in the routines that you did pre-pandemic, and you'll kind of take a little bit of pressure off your brain. But it makes perfect sense.
OK, and we are going to talk about, obviously, because your book is a 30-day guide to beating brain fog. So we will talk about those kind of strategies. But I'm really interested in why, and you mentioned it in the book, that it's often brain fog is often dismissed by medical professionals. And you mentioned hormonal changes there. And I'm wondering, is there a link between the fact that particularly women seem to suffer from it in menopausal situations and that kind of thing? Is that something to do with perhaps it being dismissed, or what's your take on what doctors think of it?
Do you know, I do discuss that in the epilogue of the book, because, you know, it can be really, really debilitating. And having experienced it myself as a consequence of autoimmune disease and chronic pain, and also kind of hormonal issues, I know how awful it is to be dismissed. You go home and think you're going crazy, like you really do. And not all doctors do dismiss, and many of them actually recognize it, but they are more focused with the underlying cause, and they often don't give any, you know, advice on how to deal with it. I did explore that. I mean, certainly pre-pandemic, it seemed that more women were affected because, for example, autoimmune diseases disproportionately affect women. A lot of chronic pain conditions disproportionately affect women. You know, we have a lot of hormonal changes throughout our life. So it kind of makes sense that that is why. You know, women are not treated equally within the healthcare, but also health research. I mean, historically, all research is done on males and men's, because hormones get in the way. But then that means that medication isn't going to work in the same way for us. And so that's kind of a historical thing. We know from research as well that if a male presents with a doctor and a female present to a doctor with the same symptoms, the doctor is more likely to look for an organic cause in the male and a psychological cause in the female.
So annoying.
I know, but that's research. And that's something that we really, really have to work at. And there's a kind of a few things going on as well. I think part of it is the research, because we'll respond differently. You know, they kind of go, oh, well, that treatment works for them. You know, must be something not working for you, but actually we're different. I think there's unconscious bias there. You know, I don't believe that the doctors, you know, generally go out to kind of treat women differently, but I think there's an unconscious bias that we really need to speak out about. I think it's funny, you know, a lot of people say to me, you know, the doctors just said it's all in my head. And I kind of go, well, that's true. Everything is in your head. Everything stems from your brain. All pain stems from your brain, you know, mental health issues, physical issues, they all stem from your brain. And I think we just need to speak up. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because the way it's set up, yes, this is a 30-day plan at the end, but the way it's set up is actually you do assessments to try and figure out what we'd call cognitive domains are affected. So rather than going to your doctor with, oh, I feel foggy and fuzzy, you know, and, you know, having trouble, you can actually specifically go in and say, well, actually, my executive function is not working, and this is how it's affecting me. And then I go into the various underlying conditions to give you a sense of whether, you know, there may be something there. And it's not to self-diagnose, it's to go to a doctor armed with meaningful information, so that, you know, the doctor really has to respond.
That should be something useful in general, I think, isn't it? Because we go into these medical situations without the lingo, without the knowledge. And so we're kind of reliant on, it's about empowering ourselves anyway. I mean, I know we don't want to be self-diagnosing with Dr. Google, but at the same time, it's useful to have information like in your kind of a book that you can bring to a doctor so that you're on the same page, at least.
There's two things there. If you Google brain fog, and that's what I start the book with, you get, I think it's, when I started, it was about 40 million hits, but I think it's up near 65 million hits at the moment. But, it, you know, as you said, you don't go to Dr. Google, you go to a trustworthy website. So you go to the NHS and you put in brain fog and you get nothing, zero, nada, zilch. So that's one reason for the book. But I think there's a second reason. I think there's an issue when we go to doctors. I don't believe that they see cognition as in their remit, but cognition is the function, you know, thinking, remembering. That's how your brain works. Now, brain fog really is a sign that your brain is malfunctioning a little bit. If any other organ in your body is malfunctioning, like your kidneys, if you're peeing too often, you go to the doctor and they say, well, we need to find out what's going on here. You go with your brain and you're kind of told, you know, you're tired or you're stressed, which it may well be. But the point is, it's a signal that something's amiss, and any other prolonged signal is checked out. You know, even a cough.
That is a really interesting point. Now, you've written this book, and obviously you're, you know, eminently qualified, and you've done a lot of research into it. But I suppose it's really important then when it gets out in the world and people who have brain fog, who are experiencing it, can use your techniques to get better. So how did you go about kind of getting guinea pigs? Because we have one of the guinea pigs here with us, and I'm going to talk to Joanna in a moment. But tell us about that. Why did you get people to read it and to who had brain fog?
Well, I think, as you said, it's important to just get real people. I mean, it's all grounded in, you know, science. It's grounded on the fundamental principles of brain health, you know, and there's a lot of research behind that. So, you know, we know it works logically, it should work, etc. But like that, yes, I wanted to get people to try it. So I reached out to various organizations and groups. So migraine, for example, would be commonly associated with brain fog. So I reached out to the Migraine Association of Ireland. I reached out to Wellness Warrior. She's a woman who, you know, who is passionate about educating people about the menopause, etc. And she has a lot of people. And I also then reached out to a long COVID group on Facebook. I have to say, the minute COVID struck, I knew there would be some sort of impact, because it's not unusual post virus. You know, sepsis, people who recover from sepsis will have brain fog for, you know, up to a year afterwards. So that's not unusual. But I got some sort of virus myself last February. I've no idea whether it was COVID, but it was some sort of serious virus. And I felt my own fog coming back, and I actually felt old pain symptoms that I had well under control, and various issues. And I still have the remains of a rash that I've had almost a year later. And it kind of got me really thinking again, no, this brain fog is going to be a real, real issue. And I started exploring it, and I discovered a group online last June, I think, that had about 12,000 members, all, you know, experiencing prolonged symptoms. And I joined the group because at that time I was trying to explore what was happening. Me, you know, did maybe I have COVID? It's irrelevant whether I did or not. I had the symptoms, of, you know, following some sort of virus. And I just asked the question, anyone here had brain fog, you know, and I described the symptoms. And within, I'd say within an hour, I had about 450 responses. Like, it was incredible. And I went, oh my God, this is something serious. So I started to look at it, and then I contacted the Times and I said, I'd like to do a piece on this and research it. And so many people agreed to be interviewed by me. And had incredible stories that included being sort of gaslit by their doctors, these people had diagnosis of brain fog. One woman got diagnosed with not brain fog, diagnosis of COVID. One woman got a diagnosis of COVID the day her own mother died from COVID. And these people were mainly women, actually, but they were in really powerful positions, jobs, works, university professors. The woman who got COVID the day her mother diagnosed, she was the public relations officer in the Merseyside police. She couldn't go back to work because she was afraid. She couldn't trust that she wouldn't reveal a name of somebody that she shouldn't. And none of them were able to go back to work because of the brain fog. But they would go to the doctors, and the doctors would be looking at their breathing or their other symptoms. But you know, she was told that her brain fog was grief for her mother. But she said, like, my father died 2 years ago. I didn't get brain fog, you know, because of that. Another woman was told it was the menopause, which it may well have been. But it's just it's being told what it might be without any support or tangible way to kind of address it is challenging.
So tell us about now Joanna Leechuk, who we're going to bring in. Where did you find Joanna?
So Joanna, I contacted the admin people on that Facebook group, and I asked them, would they reach out and see whether any, because there's very strict rules within the group, it's really a support group. So I couldn't go into the group myself for that reason. And I just said, will you reach out and see if anybody is willing to read my book and take the 30-day plan? And a couple did, actually. And Joanna was one of those. And Joanna sticks out in my mind.
Bring you in now, Joanna. So where are you coming to us from?
So I'm in Scotland, so in Fife.
In Fife, lovely, yeah. Excellent. Is that near Leith? Am I mistaken that?
It's just north of Edinburgh, just over the Forth Bridge.
I'm listening to your voice and I'm just hearing the Proclaimers, Sunshine on Leith. It's one of my favourite songs. Joanna, tell us about your experience with brain fog and then obviously what happened after you tried Sabina's 30-day plan.
Okay, so I was ill last April, early April, so coming up a year ago now. I had a really bad fever, really bad tiredness, muscle aches, headaches, sore throats. And I was in bed basically for a fortnight. And, you know, when you've been ill, you start to feel like you recover kind of day by day. You start doing a little bit more. But that just never happened for me at all. And before I was ill, you know, I was well known for having this really good memory. People would always come to me and say, oh, when did this happen? When did that happen? And then they'd come and ask me and they'd say, like, what did you have for your lunch? Like an hour later, and I'd have no memory of it at all. I couldn't spell words. I was saying the wrong words as well. Like I'd be just chatting away and then I'd just say a random word that would just change the whole sentence. But I knew I was doing it. I was aware, but it would just come out. So I just kind of felt quite hopeless about everything because I had been so sharp before, and I was off work for about 7 months as well, with kind of these ongoing symptoms. And yeah, it was just, I was forgetting everything, forgetting people's birthdays, just everything really. All these things that I was well known for remembering. So it was very frustrating.
Did you know the term brain fog at that point?
I'd heard of it before, but through my job, I've worked with people who've had it, but it wasn't something I knew much about at all.
So then when Sabina's message came up on the message board, did you immediately recognise what she was talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I thought, oh, that's me. 100%. So yes, and I think I was the first one to respond to the post. So it was just lucky that I got to do it. So
so you went and you read the book, and did it all kind of, was it, well, I suppose, first of all, was it useful to see that, Did you, I mean, you must have had what Sabina described earlier, that thing of, am I going mad? Have I got dementia? That kind of, those fears must come into your head. So was it reassuring to know that this was an actual thing?
Yeah. Yeah, even just from reading the introduction, it all just kind of sort of slotted into place. And the same with the kind of the GP. They were understanding, but they said, you know, nothing they could do really. And it was more about that the other symptoms I had they were more interested in. And even just from then, I thought, you know, I can identify with this straight away.
So then if we get into the 30-day guide and the book, what happened? Tell me about the things you introduced into your daily life and how they affected your brain fog.
So, I mean, it kind of breaks down the plan into different areas of your life as well. So stress was a big one for me because I've been basically stressed for over a year now. Just with the whole pandemic, I was stressed with that anyway and being at work. I wasn't sleeping as a result of that. So that was the first two kind of things linking in. And because I was tired, I wasn't eating very well, and I wasn't exercising basically at all because I was so tired. So I was in this just a vicious circle of everything, really. So I kind of explained why. And once I started to kind of work away piece by piece at the different bits in the book, then it really made sense and it really helped.
So tell me about some of the changes you made to your daily life as a result of the book.
So the first one was really getting into a routine for my sleep, which I found very difficult because I wasn't sleeping well at all. I'd be sleeping during the day. I wouldn't be sleeping well at night. So it was just really getting into that routine, kind of settling yourself down, sort of turning the lights down a bit, not watching TV too late, not being on your phone, which I'm quite bad for. So yeah, it was getting into that routine and saying to my friends and family, you know, don't text me after sort of 10 o'clock at night because I'll not be, my phone won't be on. So yeah, it was just kind of a lifestyle
sleep,
change.
And then what about the food and exercise? How did you manage that?
So food was a bit more challenging because I'm still quite fatigued from the virus. I was trying to find things that were easy to make, but also healthier as well, because I have been guilty of kind of sugary snacks if I'm feeling a bit fed up and things. So yeah, and then exercise. It's not just sort of physical, it's also for your mind as well. So I was trying to do different things, like I was trying sort of craft things, different things I could do at my own pace, as well as doing some exercise as well. So
they all sound quite sort of obvious in a way, like holistically, like sleep, food, exercise. Was there anything else that you added in that was kind of very impactful?
I think it was just a combination, like you're saying, that it's things that kind of seem obvious at the time. But when you're in that situation, you just feel like hopeless. And that's not going to improve. So to actually just have that guidance of what to do is so powerful.
So tell me about your brain fog now or how you are now.
Oh, it's improved a lot. Like I can do a lot because at work I have to do Teams meetings a lot and I'd basically forget things. And when I was doing assessments on patients, I'd have to write it all down. But I did one yesterday and I remembered everything, which is great. So yeah, so it's real progress, definitely. I just feel a bit more sort of in control of things as well. So no, things are going really well.
So how do you feel about, you know, this idea that it's dismissed a bit by doctors, so they say they can't do anything? Do you feel like when you went that you should have been told all this stuff in the doctor's surgery?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because it just kind of left you sort of in limbo. You didn't know what to do or who to turn to because they kind of expect them to know these things and to tell you how to help as well. So
you would have written about it just in response to say how you got on. Do you have a little piece of what you wrote in terms of your feedback there for us to read? Because it was quite it sounds like it really did. I mean, it sounds like you were going through a very, very tough time that sort of had no end in sight. Mm-hmm. And then this allowed you to take a bit more control and to see improvements. And it must have been quite a great feeling to know that you could actually change things for the better yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I've got a sort of quote, but here I can read out for you. So I feel that from reading this book and taking part in the plan that I found the parts of me that I thought I may never come back again after being unwell for so long. And I feel I can continue to progress in my life. And most importantly, I'm starting to feel like me again.
That's brilliant. Sabina, listening to Joanna there, I suppose it's great when you write something that actually impact someone's life in a positive way like that. How do you feel about Joanna's experience?
I was really emotional when I read it the first time because she did say she felt she lost herself and that she'd lost hope and that the book restored hope. And I just found that very, very moving. She said lots of lovely things. But the see,
I think the thing probably with this, with the likes of Joanne, who's recovering from a very serious viral illness, the book explains that you have to take teeny weeny weeny baby steps, you know, and particularly sort of with the mental exercises. So often people think, no, I got to get out and do a 5K. You can't do that after a viral illness, you know. Joanne, I think you said at the time you started the book, you could barely walk to your hall door. You literally hadn't done anything. And then at the end of it, she said she was taking online Zoom yoga classes, which was like just huge. But she was afraid to exercise because she felt she should be resting. But the thing is, it's like, and I use that analogy in the book, it's like if you break your ankle or twist your ankle, there's a point at which you must rest to allow the initial recovery. But then there comes a point where you have to start using it again. And that is painful because for rest, there is a loss of function. And the longer you rest, the more function you will use. And that will apply to your brain fog and your physical. You've become deconditioned. And so as well, the same, like a lot of people have said to me, they can't watch television anymore because they can't follow the plot. They can't read a book. They just can't focus. So literally what I would say to those when it's that bad, okay, just today, read a line of the book and do that for a week. Read a line and then try to read two lines next week. It really can be that slow, you know, it can take that, but actually gradually you can build up. You're trying to recondition in this instance, you know, in terms of a virus. With other conditions and with, you know, like what we're talking about, pandemic brain, etc., you really can kick yourself back in much quicker. And I, you know, it's interesting just to speak back to what you were saying about, you know, sleep, stress, exercise, diet. They all seem very basic, but I think that the trick of the book is it explains why sleep is absolutely critical to your brain function. How, when you disrupt sleep, you cannot remember things, you cannot learn, because there's things that happen in your brain at night that are critical for both of those. So I think that's what helps. And as Joanna said, I mean, they're rituals. I just at the end, you know, the 30-day plan is full of rituals to reset your life and revive your brain, and they're quite gentle. Because I just think when you've brain fog, you're already too challenged.
Sabina, you experienced it yourself. You touched on that earlier. So all these things are stuff that you've done because you suffer from migraines. I saw you tweeting, I think, yesterday.
Oh, this week. Yeah. I have what's called chronic daily migraines. So I always have a headache of some shape or form or pain in my neck or whatever. But, you know, the brain is brilliant. You adapt and you just get on with your life. Every so often, you know, I get struck down. And probably the reason I had it the last couple of days is that with promoting the book, I've just been, you know, not adhering to my own advice because I've been working, you know, morning till night and constantly under pressure. But yes, and I have an autoimmune disease and I have a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. And I was at a point several years ago where I had stopped doing everything. I couldn't even walk my dogs anymore. To wash my hair was absolutely, just to lift my arms up was exhausting. You know, if I was trying to stir a bolognese on the stove, the pain was excruciating. And I, like a bit like kind of Joanna, I just stopped doing everything because it was so painful. You know, I had a diagnosis of I have Sjogren's syndrome. And at that point, the fibromyalgia, the pain was just everywhere. And I was doing my PhD at the time, and all I did was my PhD. And then eventually I remember my rheumatologist saying to me, similarly to what I've just said there, you're going to have to start walking again, Sabina, you know. And I would say it was like when I'd move, it was like someone was stabbing daggers into my thighs. And even when I was sitting, that would happen. And he said, you're just going to have to push through it. And I literally started like that with I live in a Mews house, so I'm about 90 feet from the road. And I started with that, just walking to the gate and back and gradually building up. And, you know, hey, presto, the pain does start to go, you know, it really does. I still get pain on and off. But also, if I do start to feel really bad, I know that I have fallen. I mean, people say to me, you know how to do all these things, but I'm a human being before I'm a health psychologist and a neuroscientist. So I fall into the same traps that other people do. You know, you kind of fall off the wagon. And especially if you're feeling good and healthy, you forget sometimes that the reason you're feeling good and healthy is because you're doing all these things. And sometimes you go, oh, what's the harm in having a few G&Ts and staying up late? And then you get the consequence of it, you know.
But I haven't mentioned, I mean, it is very much, like you say, you explain the different brain functions and, you know, how they're affected. And that's from everything from attention, processing, speed, learning and memory and language and some of the things that Joanna described there. And when you identify those brain functions that are, you know, impaired, you can adapt appropriate strategies. I like one of your suggestions, which is a one drop spot for all the important things such as keys, glasses, wallets and passports. I think everyone, no matter if you're suffering from brain fog or not, it's a good idea. Just one place where all those important things go.
Yeah, yeah. And I do follow that myself because it used to be mayhem in our house in the morning. But yeah, I should say that. So I think it's the second chapter in the book is a book is just full of strategies that you can adopt to help you cope with the symptoms while you have them. Obviously, the overall aim of the book is to get you to make those brain healthy lifestyle changes to ultimately, you know, clear the brain fog or minimize it as much as possible. But then the other strategies like that, you match your particular dysfunction with the strategy. And they do help. They help immensely. And I mean, really what I say about the book as well, even if you don't have brain fog, it will actually help you optimize your functioning anyway, you know, because most of us, I kind of feel that the brain is the most underused resource on the planet. And most of us aren't optimizing its functioning and we're not reaching our true potential.
Joanna, just going back to you, like, do you feel like you've had a bit of a new lease of life, or, you know, are you a bit of an evangelist now for this kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. It's totally changed my perspective and everything. Yeah.
And are you talking to other people who are still maybe suffering very badly with brain fog?
Yeah, I'm still in touch with people in the support group and the action group. And I've got a few people I know through work and things as well that have these symptoms too. So,
and have you spoken to any medical professionals about it and about how all this stuff has helped you?
Well, I tried to speak to my GP about it the other day, but they're not really terribly interested, unfortunately. So.
What do you mean, like, not interested? Wow. How can you not be interested in the fact that you've, you know, done stuff to improve your health?
I know. Yeah, they're just still thinking about the physical symptoms. So,
what do you think about that, Sabina? Is that something?
Wow. Yeah, I'm quite surprised about that. So you still have some prolonged physical symptoms from? Have you shortness of breath or do you mind sharing that?
Yeah, no, I've still got fatigue, and I've got an autoimmune disease now as well. So
you got that as a consequence of long COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that's happening, you know, because, you know, autoimmune diseases. And then there's a whole chapter in the book about how inflammation, your immune responses, pain, how they all interact and impact on your cognitive functioning. But that's classic, you know, it's the doctors, they not all doctors, I have to say, but they really just focus on the physical. And the thing is, actually, if they focused, and I say this time and time again, if you focus on brain health, physical health and mental health follow. Do you know, because they are, the brain is the master controller. It's the source of it. And I have spoken to other enlightened doctors, you know, particularly in the migraine space and in the multiple sclerosis space, because I work in both of those spaces on the issue of brain health and dealing with brain fog. And there are much more enlightened people in that space because they're aware that the cognitive dysfunction associated with those conditions can be, particularly with multiple sclerosis. Often when people get a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, they're worried that their mobility issues will stop them from working. Actually, the fact of the matter is it's their brain fog that ultimately stops them from working. So there's a real shift and a focus towards, you know, underscoring the importance of brain health. But one of the, you know, and I also spoke to the head of the Sepsis Trust around the issue of brain fog, because he would be very aware of that he feels there's a need for a re-education piece with doctors to actually re-educate them and educate them about brain health and about how they're all linked, because it's not really something that's covered in their training. You know, so I do think that's a bigger piece that we need. And I think people like Joanna and myself, you know, we can just keep trying to raise awareness. And I think that's one positive, not that there's positives in a pandemic, but I think the fact that so many people are experiencing brain fog has brought it to the fore. And I'm actually seeing, because I'm keeping an eye on the research, there is now some money being invested in trying to understand, you know, the brain fog. Of course, people are going to the inflammatory markers and those kind of things. But anything that helps us understand it, you know, is good progress.
Sabina, have you had any pushback? Because I'm just curious about Joanna's GP's response, you know, more interested in the physical symptoms. Have you had anybody, Sabina, kind of saying, oh, what are you going on about? This is nonsense, or any kind of cynical?
Well, no, I actually haven't, because the thing is, you know, brain health, the pillars of brain health are well known and well established for a very long time. There's a huge body of research, and you know, that's what my first book was about, really, you know, but in the context of aging. So nobody can kind of knock down that exercise is good for your, it's good for your brain, because you need a you know, a healthy cardiovascular system to provide the oxygen and nutrients that you need, and to be aerobically fit means that your brain will function. But also, we know if you take that deeper dive that the book does, when you exercise, there's chemicals released in your brain, a particular one called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. And I just call it Miracle-Gro for the brain, because it acts like a fertilizer in your brain, and it makes your brain more fertile for growing new brain cells and connections between your brain cells. So in order to learn anything, to take in any new information, to do anything, you want to harness neuroplasticity in your brain. And that's the ability of your brain to change with learning. And that's the growth of new connections. So physical exercise promotes neuroplasticity through the release of that fertilizer. That's just sort of one example of how nobody can kind of really push back on those things, because it's just science. I mean, I'm sure that if some doctors do read it, that they'll be, oh. But I mean, I have had positive feedback from doctors in the menopause space, also from, you know, doctor in the, a gastroenterologist, because she said, you know, loads of her patients experience brain fog as a consequence of, you know, gastrointestinal issues. And I mean, that's not surprising, because we often refer to the gut as the second brain. So you've nearly as many neurons in your gut as your brain, and they're linked together. But I have been getting lovely emails from people who I got a lovely email from a gentleman the other day who said that he'd been sick for the last year, and he read the book. He'd obviously heard me talking. He read the book. He's gone through it. He's made changes. And he said he's already seen, I can't remember the word he used, but an incredible difference. And you can almost hear the relief in him, you know, that he didn't know what was going. And he said he's spoken to some of his friends and they're experiencing the same. And I suspect that was probably pandemic brain fog or whatever, you know.
Joanna, I just want to come back to you finally. Like, it sounds like things are a lot better for you, but long COVID is a really interesting thing, and it obviously has so many repercussions for your physical and your mental health. What would you like people to know about what you've experienced in the last year? Because I think anyone who hasn't had COVID or hasn't experienced it might be just, it's hard for people to get their heads around, in a way, something lasting so long.
I just think it's all the sort of complexities of everything that's happened as well. And I think, like you're saying, people aren't aware. Like, I still know people who are amazed that COVID exists, because they don't know anyone who's had it. They don't know anyone who's died from it. So it's really just to have that awareness that, you know, it is a dangerous virus, and not to scare people, but it's just to be safe and sensible as well, because the last thing you want is to end up having COVID and then contracting long COVID after that as well. So,
what stage of a lockdown are you in now, Joanna, in Scotland?
So we're hoping things are easing. I think the stay-at-home order finishes next week, but we have to stay local until the end of April.
What does local mean in Scotland? Because we've got a 5K limit here.
It's to be within your county.
Oh, yeah. You're lucky. So, yeah.
And Fife's huge, so that's good.
Oh, Fife's a big county, is it? So you've got all sorts of things you can go and see in Fife.
St. Andrews and all sorts. So.
Oh, gorgeous. And when will that widen out even further, do you think?
Well, after that, we're all going into Tier 3, which is still stay within your county, but then non-essential shops and hairdressers open next week, end of next Woo-hoo! Week. So I'll get my hair cut on the 15th of April.
You're making us all jealous here. Well, listen, and are you going to get vaccinated soon then as well?
I've had both of them. Because I work in the NHS, I've had both of them now. So
that is.
Yeah, so I'm very lucky.
I was just saying, I think it's really important to point out that Joanna is only, you don't mind me sharing your age, Joanna. Joanna's only 31. Do you know? And I just think that's something to point out. And a lot of people that I have encountered who have long COVID are very young, in their 20s, people who were, you know, really, really, really active, who have ended up practically bedbound as a consequence. And often many of those had one of those that comes to mind, she's an anaesthetist I can never say that word, but she only had very mild COVID, like a sinus infection. And that's often the case.
Well, I think you're right, Joanna, about the awareness and people sort of understanding that if you do bloody get COVID, it can actually knock you out for a long, long time. And it can have all sorts of repercussions that we can't even imagine. And just to keep that in mind when we're all trying to be safe. But Sabina, it's obviously that you're helping a lot of people, which is great, and probably positively impacting maybe the medical profession, helping them understand brain fog a bit better than they did before. So hopefully that's a result of your book. But Sabina and Joanna, thank you very much for talking to us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for. That was Dr. Sabina Brennan and Joanna Leschuk. And the book is called Beating Brain Fog. The podcast is produced by me, Roisin Ingle, by Jennifer Ryan and Suzanne Brennan, with JJ Vernon on sound. Mind yourselves, keep those brains sharp, and I will talk to you next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.